This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 273 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm drowning in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Or I should say I'm David in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Boy, it's been a bad couple of days. Snow, rain, ice. I can't wait to get to Hawaii in 3 weeks.
Oh, that'll be nice. I'm so envious. But meantime, we have a number of stories here to take our minds off of the screwball weather.
Yeah, instead we have screwball people flying drones in the wrong spot. So I'm sure we're going to spend a lot of time tonight talking about NORC and my father's hometown and DJI's response to that, as well as what's happening for the Super Bowl besides bad calls. And something I thought was really kind of neat, which was a delivery drone that is inspired by birds. And it has an unconventional landing gear, as well as takeoff. And we actually have a video of the week this week. Yay!
All right.
And we're going to talk taxis, because it looks like the big boys are getting involved with the taxis now.
They are.
With that, I think maybe we should get started, Max. What do you think?
Let's get started, David.
NORC Airport had a drone sighting, or multiple drone sightings, or I don't know what to think of this. This was made all of the news here in the States, not as panicked as it was Gatwick or Heathrow, but it is the first major real airport here in the States that actually caused a shutdown due to a drone sighting. I'm using the words drone and sighting in air quotes if you can't see me. The first one was from New York Times, as well as the independent.co.ua. And it wasn't really NORC that they saw the drones over, was it?
Well, you know, there were different reports, David. The first report said that the drone sightings were associated with Teterboro Airport, also in New Jersey. Which is a private facility, private airport, not too far from Newark.
No, an executive airport, it's about 10 miles away.
Subsequent reports say that, the reports came from two pilots, one Southwest Airlines pilot and another United Airlines pilot that were in the Newark Airport airspace in the approach pattern, I guess. But, when I read this, David, this is another example of a report where the drone was spotted, or at least one of the reports, a drone was spotted at 3,500 feet, which, of course, is possible. But I don't know, at that altitude, it's kind of unlikely. Plus, how would you see a drone traveling at the speed you're traveling at 3,500 feet on approach?
Yeah, this is one of those... we don't know what they saw. It's a UFO. Pilots are trained observers. They're really good at what they do. But as a follow-on to this, DJI actually came out with an article about not everything you see in the sky is a drone. And this is from press release, but they quote say, DJI is monitoring recent reports of drone sharing flying in close proximity to various airports and has offered assistance to investigators in airports where those sightings have occurred. To this date, none of these reports have been confirmed and there is no proof that the alleged incidents occurred. Despite the lack of evidence, new sightings have been reported at more airports and the prospect that new reports are being spurred by publicity of past incidents. And Max, you and I will agree that we are not for flying drones near airports. We do not want to see that happen.
Certainly not.
That being said, the observations recently are getting kind of worse. We still haven't seen the drone from the Mexico air crash where the dome was caved in. I would have hoped to have seen some parts from the UAV at that point, but that sort of has faded away. This incident in Newark, 3,500 feet on probably the coldest day this year in 2019. No one's really going to go out flying a drone for entertainment purposes unless they have a nefarious intent. That being said, I don't know what to think anymore. I want people to report this stuff, but it gets reported as a drone, but then it never gets responded to later on that it wasn't a drone. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. You rarely see the retraction of the initial claim that it was a drone. DJI, in their press release, points out some examples of this in the past. For example, in the UK, it wasn't a drone. In 2016, it was a plastic bag. Structural failure associated with the Mozambique incident in 2017. Also in 2017, a drone in Australia was actually a bat. And we even have from last year, 2018, in New Zealand, it was a balloon. So it just seems like anytime something unidentified is spotted in the air these days, it gets characterized as a drone. I don't know. I think I agree with DJI that there's too much of a tendency to jump to conclusions here. And we need to be careful. And the press needs to be careful. Because, you know, they are stirring up this kind of sentiment. Now, again, like you say, David, I mean, we both are completely opposed to flying drones around airports. And we need to find a way to deal with that kind of a problem. But it really does start to feel like the problem is being overstated to a certain degree.
You know, and we have had our friends at the National Transportation Safety Board talk about things. And when we get reports of drone incidents, suddenly later on we hear things like, well, you should have saw all of the drone leaving all of the blood and feathers on the wing of the Beechcraft. We started this show because pilots were very, very anti-UASs and they were going to fly into their windscreens and people were going to die. And we wanted to show the positiveness of UAVs. We've seen some really stupid things occur over the years we've done this show, but we got to now find a balance because the pendulum has swung. Because if you don't know what you see, you're going to say it was a UAV. 3,500 is almost 3/4 of a mile up, folks. If you can fly your drone that far, more power to you, but it's just going to be a challenge going forward. Now, you can send all of your complaints to feedback at the UAV Digest, but I think everyone agrees that we don't want to cry wolf. I guess my scare, Max, is I don't want to cry wolf.
Yeah, yes.
I don't want, when actually it really is a serious incident, that people are going to go, oh, well, that's been happening all the time. And unfortunately, it was Newark, which is New York. The three airports there are probably the busiest three airports in North America if you combine them. You know, there's places like Atlanta, which are busier, but you got three airports in the New York area as well as a high visibility area for terrorism. So I understand people being cautious, but we need to be cautious and we need to be precise. And a two-hour shutdown at Newark is not something to be argued with. But that being said, it's now a long way away and we haven't heard anything else from it. So I guess we'll move on to the next incident. So let's talk about pilots who are really observant and refs that are completely not observant. Oh, I'm sorry. We're talking about the Super Bowl and poor Louisiana and the Saints getting robbed. But, This was kind of interesting. Now, I know one of my favorite dips at the Super Bowl is guacamole. And you can't make guacamole without avocados. So now, welcome to the avocado portion of the show.
I was wondering how the avocado came into the Super Bowl conversation. Okay, I get it.
When have you not been to a Super Bowl party that doesn't have avocado, guacamole and salsa and chips?
I guess you're right.
That's a staple.
So this is from the University of Florida scientists. They've published some research that says that multispectral cameras can detect laurel wilt on avocado trees. Now, why is this important? Well, it's important to Florida because Florida is the second leading producer of avocados. As you might guess, California comes in first. Avocados in Florida apparently provide $100 million worth of economic benefit to the state. But if you can figure out that multispectral cameras can detect this wilt that's damaging to avocado crops, well, David, since you know what show this is, the next comment isn't a great leap.
No. In general, growers need to scout in their field and visually detect infected plants. It's time-consuming, labor-intensive, and costly. Of course, they can only detect diseases based on their symptoms. But the prop seed system, which is what was discussed here, basically identifies that from the air, and an unmanned aerial vehicle or drone with multispectral cameras costing between $3,000 and $8,000 would be able to find them, and you can weed out the bad avocados because we need our guacamole. But that being said, I mean, it goes back to precision alcohol. See, I'm ready for the Super Bowl party already.
I guess. Now,
precision agriculture and being able to find a needle in a haystack, I mean, is what you're looking for. You're looking for being precise and picking out the bad apples, or in this case, avocados, and removing them so they do not spread the disease. And you're spending maybe $8,000 on a quadcopter that minimizes the amount of effort, and you might be saving tens of thousands of dollars worth of produce for your farm.
Yeah, it's a good application. Although, I'll be honest with you, David, guacamole isn't my favorite, but that's okay. A lot of people enjoy it.
Well, you're just from New England.
No, the salsa and chips, that's great stuff.
Well, okay, you can keep the salsa and chips and I'll eat the guacamole. We're a team here. We work on these kind of synergies.
Now, David, this next story that you found, I love this story.
Okay, well, take it away.
Oh, okay. Well, this is from the IEEE. Delivery drones use bird-inspired legs to jump into the air. And this comes from, I guess, Passerine Aircraft Corporation. Fixed-wing drones that can take off and land using a pair of legs, kind of like a bird does. Now, it turns out that we've all seen birds, of course, start to fly. And as it's pointed out here, they actually do not use their wings to lift off the ground. They're actually using their legs to sort of spring off the ground, and then their wings come into play. And this drone from this South African startup company works just like that. So it kind of addresses one of the issues with VTOL, in that if you've got a small space to land and take off from, we think about VTOL kinds of craft, but that's not a very efficient method of generating lift. And so the idea here is you have a fixed wing drone so that in horizontal flight it's efficient, and instead of bothering with the ducted fans or that sort of thing to generate the vertical part of the process, use these little legs to spring the craft into the air.
And this winged vehicle uses a blown wing, which is you put the engines over the wings and the thrust using the Coriander effect covers the wings. And so there's additional lift provided by the wing from the engine thrust going over the wing, as well as the forward movement generating lift. So it's an interesting combination. Originally, Boeing produced an aircraft called the YC-14, which was the competitor, which actually had two large engines blown, which the airflow blew over the wings. The engines were on top of the wings. It lost to the YC-15, which eventually became the C-17 Globemaster III. But this technology's been around for a while. It's kind of cool, though, seeing it in drones. And the more air you flow over the wings, the better lift you provide.
The reason I think that we don't see this in commercial use is that with the engines way up there on top of the wings, there's difficulties with access for maintenance. And there's a couple other practical kinds of considerations. Plus, the runways are all long enough so that there's plenty of runway length to build up the speed. And so that extra initial lift from the blown wing setup isn't really required. But for a drone, for this kind of an application, it may be just a ticket. Now, there's a number of videos. We'll put links to some of them in the show notes. One of them shows the legs being tested. And interestingly enough, David, they noted that when they started to design this, they did not directly start out to exactly mimic bird legs and how birds do this. But through the iterations in the development process, they found that their design ended up getting closer and closer to just the way birds do this. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And there's another video in there that shows the airplane itself, the aircraft itself, without those legs, but demonstrating the blown wing concept. So you can learn more about those by looking at the videos in the show notes.
So why did you like this so much?
Because it's so odd looking and bizarre to see something that looks like a fixed wing aircraft jump off the ground, leap off the ground into the air, and then start flying. It's I love these novel concepts. I also like concepts that imitate nature. I think those are always kind of insightful.
Okay, let's not imitate nature and let's move on to Facebook. How many years have we been talking about Facebook wanting to fly their own drones? In fact, they gave it up, but evidently they didn't give it up because now they're getting involved Airbus. This was from digitaltrends.com. Facebook hasn't given up on the idea of building an internet drone. And Netzpolitik, Fairbus, Facebook and Airbus hold secretive drone tests in the Australian bush.
Ooh. Yeah, there are a couple of articles about this, and they all reference this German publication, Netzpolitik. So there's just one source now, but apparently what they've done is that they filed a Freedom of Information Act in Australia against conversations going on at the Australian Civil Aviation Safety Authority, or CASA. And they received a document as a result of this Freedom of Information Act request, which is partially redacted, but not too heavily. And what they say is that there's a number of meetings, number of conversations between CASA and Airbus. And in the notes for one of the meetings, it talked about specifically mentioning Facebook to provide payload and ops. It's kind of indirect. I'm not sure, you know, there is some kind of a connection, but it's kind of hard to be very precise with this based on my reading of this document anyway. But it appears that despite Facebook saying the Aquila project is off, they're done with this idea, that they may be working with Airbus in some sense, although it's difficult to say exactly what, but in some ways to continue with their initial plans to use high-altitude pseudo-satellites for internet connectivity. So the headlines are all dramatic about this secret link-up between the two companies, but nobody's saying much about it right now.
It's funny. We talked about consolidation last year and maybe people reaching out to do things beyond what their comfort level is. Facebook should probably not be designing aircraft. Airbus probably should not be designing internet connectivity. So maybe if you work together and provide your strong points, you'll get a better product. So we'll follow this up if anybody else knows more about what Mr. Zuckerberg has in mind for Airbus. We'll see. So let's talk about, we haven't touched it yet, regulations for this week. This is CORUS, or the Concept of Operations in European UTM Systems, or Unmanned Traffic Management. So what are the drone traffics doing in Europe, Max?
Well, there's this concept for a European system for managing drones. I refer to it as U-Space. And this makes a great deal of sense. What they're looking to do here is develop some uniform regulations, some uniform UTM systems approach across the EU. Again, you know, you don't want to have individual countries that are managing flights with different systems. They want to achieve the same thing we see with manned aircraft. So they are working to bring the aviation stakeholders together, and that means both manned and unmanned, to develop a concept of operations for what they call U-Space. So they have a workshop. This is actually the third workshop they're organizing in Italy for early April, April 2nd through 5th. And if this is something that you'd like to become involved in, we'll have a link in the show notes where you can get more information about this and register for the workshop.
So check the show notes. That would be the UAVdigest.com. Okay, Max, we talk about these two companies a lot on our other show. Not a week goes by that we don't talk about either Boeing or Airbus. Now, when we started this show, I didn't think we'd be talking about flying taxis as much as we do. But that being said, it looks like the big two, Boeing and Airbus, in the next two stories we'll talk through, are getting into the flying taxi business, and they're pretty much far along. This after we heard Bell Helicopter was also in this a couple weeks ago. So it looks like it's no longer the small startups now, it's the big boys are getting involved.
It's very clear that these large corporations, these large aviation companies are looking towards a future where personal air travel, air taxis, eVTOL, all of these Uber in the sky, urban air mobility, whatever you want to call it. But they all seem to think that this is an important part of the market that they need to play in. So the first item is from a Boeing press release, and Boeing has announced that their autonomous passenger air vehicle, or PAV, has flown in Manassas, Virginia. This is a prototype that's been designed and developed by Aurora Flight Sciences, which of course is now a Boeing subsidiary.
And it's an eVTOL, so e-vertical takeoff and landing. The PA completed a controlled takeoff, hover, and landing. Future flights will be forward on wing-borne flight. This is a lot larger a vehicle than a lot of the other ones, Max. It's more airplane and less quadcopter, I guess, would be the best way to describe it.
That's what it looks like. And it is large, 30 feet long, 28 feet wide. And yeah, I agree. It does have more of an aircraft-like look to it. It has rotors for the vertical component, and then it looks like a pusher motor at the tail of it. In this image that we have here from Boeing, it shows, now this, again, this is just a prototype, but the rotors are exposed, and there's no way that a production vehicle of this type is going to have exposed rotors, especially when the rotors are attached to arms at the lower part of the fuselage. So these rotors are just a few feet off the ground, not up above head level like you would find in a helicopter. So, I mean, that design cannot stand, you know, the test of commercialization. But it is just a prototype, so I guess that's okay. You know, David, it's interesting that besides this passenger air vehicle or PAV concept, Boeing is also working, they say, on an unmanned fully electric cargo air vehicle, or CAV, that they say will be able to carry up to 500 pounds. And they're also working on other urban, regional, and global mobility platforms. So whatever Boeing is up to, it's not all based on just this one aircraft. Clearly, they're taking this market quite seriously.
We might get our flying cars yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if Boeing goes somewhere, of course, now it's got to be Airbus's turn. And this was from finance.yahoo.com. Airbus's flying taxi posed for takeoff within weeks.
Yeah, they call this the City Airbus. And they have a prototype 4-seat model for urban environments. And they've been doing some testing at the Airbus helicopter plant in Germany. Initially, they're planning unmanned flights. The objective in the end is an autonomous vehicle that they are hoping could enter into service as early as 2023.
So we'll keep our eye open for that. But City Airbus goes into production depending upon the regulatory situation. And it's 4 passengers autonomously, or it'll be 3 passengers and a pilot. Again, I will put it out there for all of our listeners. If anybody needs fresh meat to fly in said autonomous vehicle, I will be willing to volunteer for that job. So Airbus, Boeing, if you want somebody to fly with you, I'll be happy to do it for you.
But now, David, would you fly in a bladeless drone?
I would, which is our video of the week. It's funny, this came up. I found this bladeless drone. And one of the reasons why it was because it's something we've been discussing a lot recently, which is noise. That this bladeless quadcopter or jet-powered aircraft is substantially quieter than our propeller-driven friends.
We were talking about having exposed rotors before. If you need to avoid that, then you're looking at some kind of shrouding or something. But even that's not always effective. And so what the developer here has done is basically take the idea of a shrouded motor or engine and put that in a tube so that there is nothing exposed to the outside elements. And the thrust from the motor is sort of ducted through this tube, each of the tubes in the case of a quad motor, and they are ducted downward at the end and provide the thrust to fly the craft. So it's an interesting concept. I mean, it starts with the idea that having blades whirring around is dangerous. So what's the ultimate solution? Well, build them into the system, in this case, into the tubes, so that there is nothing exposed. It's kind of interesting.
And ducted fan technology has been around for a while. The very first sort of jet model airplanes, radio-controlled jet aircraft, were actually what they call ducted fans, which were shrouded propellers inside the fuselage. Eventually, they went to full jet engines. But ducted fan technology has been around, I guess, since at least the early 80s. In the model aircraft industry. So it's not a far jump. So we've got some really good videos this week. We've got a jumping jet aircraft, and we've got this quadcopter, which is ducted fan, so and quiet. So definitely check out our videos. And Max, where can they find them at?
Well, of course, go to our webpage, theuavdigest.com. Right after we publish this episode, it'll be the first on the page. If you're listening to this much later and it's scrolled down, well, then you can go straight to the show notes by visiting the UAV Digest/273.
And of course, you can find us on all sorts of social media, but the one we really want you on is our Slack listener team. You can join the club, as I like to call it, by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest. But you can also find us on Facebook as well as Twitter. Max and I are both also on LinkedIn, so you can look us up there. And of course, you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. But most of all, we'd like you to leave some feedback on whatever podcatcher you use, either Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher.com or whatever ones you use. And I guess with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.